Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America Prospect Handbook Podcast. I'm JJ Cooper, joined by Ben Badler, as we are most every week. And we're going to talk prospects as we always do. Prospects are going to be a little bit younger this week because we're going to talk July 2. Well, not just July 2nd, but the July 2nd signing period. Starting on July 2nd, teams are allowed to sign Latin American, well, really any world 16-year-olds who are not subject to the baseball draft. And there have been a lot of signings already. Ben's the expert on that. You probably already know that if you follow him on Twitter, Ben Badler, or if you've been going to baseballamerica.com this week because we've had a whole lot of news about signings. Before we do that, though, I do want to thank our friends at DraftDay.com.
DraftDay.com is a new concept that offers short-term or daily fantasy sports games for real money. The concept is simple. You pick the day you want to play and set a fantasy lineup. If your picks perform well that day, you win. You can play for free or real money, and they award cold hard cash nightly to the top performing players. They've already awarded more than $10 million, and it's completely legal to play. DraftDay.com also has a new rapid fire game that takes 1 minute to play with huge payouts. Just pick between a few choices of players and choose the ones that will score the most points. It's that easy. All you need is 3 of 5 correct to double your money. DraftDay is offering a special offer to Baseball America listeners, so be sure to head to DraftDay.com and enter the promo code BAPODCAST, and that'll start you off with a free instant cash bonus. If you like free money, head to DraftDay.com and use promo code BAPODCAST.
Thanks again to DraftDay.com. So, Ben, we're going to dive right in on this. And the thing that jumps out this week, it's been a lot of news, been a lot of signings. A lot of teams have already kind of dipped pretty significantly into their signing bonus pool allotments that we have now with the new system and all the new CBA. But there hadn't seemed to be a whole lot of surprises. You know this a lot better than I do. Has anything that's happened this week really surprised you, Ben?
No, I wouldn't say there have been any major surprises yet. You know, the Rangers did go, it looks like they're going significantly over their bonus pool. I did hear that that was something they were going to do, but we did want to be kind of cautious about that before we wrote anything before July 2nd, although we sort of hinted at it before, but 2 years or sometimes even longer. I mean, you know, a guy like Eloy Jimenez, who was in Amari Nina's program when, you know, Elier Hernandez was, you know, a 16-year-old kid who was popping up on the radar and signed with the Royals for $3 million a couple of years ago. Well, back then, that's when teams were getting their first looks at Eloy Jimenez, so they've been scouting him for years. There's kids in Venezuela like Gleyber Torres, Grafer Andrade, all these guys who've been playing for Venezuelan tournament teams or Venezuelan, like basically junior national teams, since they were, you know, 15, 14, sometimes as young as 12 years old. So they've known about these guys for a long time. So I think teams are coming in at July 2nd, you had a pretty good idea of where guys were going to be headed. So it's always good to see it kind of play out the way you expected it. You know, one of the surprises was I did think the A's might be interested in Jesus Lopez. I wasn't sure if the Astros were going to be able to lock that down, a shortstop out of Nicaragua, although he's probably not going to stay at shortstop because he's not really a quick twitch guy, doesn't really run all that well, but he's a really good game hitter. So I think the A's stepped up and got him done. But other than that, I think for the most part, guys pretty much landed where they were expected to go. Obviously with some top guys who are still out there, because they're 15 or because they're just waiting for a team to acquire the bonus pool space to officially lock them down before a team runs out of space and can't trade for anymore. But for the most part, I think teams pretty much did what we expected them to do.
It is interesting. There's obviously always kind of some kind of effects that happen with new CBA rules and all that are either expected or unexpected. One of the things that jumps out is you cannot, as you pointed out, you could not acquire space after you've exceeded it. You have to do that before you sign. The thing that's funny with that, though, is that, again, a lot of these deals get worked out, and then you just wait, you know, to see if you can acquire that space. Obviously, that maybe explains why of the top 30 prospects that you put together before the signing period began, 4 of the top 5 have not officially signed. As you mentioned, you know, a couple of them I don't believe are actually eligible to sign yet. And then if you go beyond that, I believe 4 of the from 6 to 30, only four guys have not signed. With a guy like the Cubs, what they're doing seems to be the Rangers and the Cubs are kind of probably the most interesting. Talk a little bit, if you would, about what the Cubs are doing. You mentioned Eloy Jimenez. Do you think they're going to be able to acquire more cap room, or do you think that they're just going to kind of take the tax that's going to come with going over and signing the group that they're looking to sign?
Yeah, and this is what we wrote about the week before July 2nd, is that it looked like they basically indicated to the agents and the trainers of various players that they were going to pay them a certain amount of money, which is seems to have come true between Eloy Jimenez, Gleyber Torres, Jefferson Mejia, big right-hander out of the Dominican Republic, as well as Erling Moreno, right-handed pitcher out of Colombia, the number 16 guy on the board. So I think that they made those commitments to guys or sort of gave their word to them, but then they didn't have those trades worked out before July 2nd, and because you can't trade for more pool space until July 2nd. You could have an agreement in place with a team to make that trade, but you can't actually pull it off until July 2nd. I don't think they had the agreements in place to trade for more pool money. I think the reason why MLB makes that rule is basically cost control, because if you can trade for more pool money before July 2nd, then teams are going to know they're going to be more comfortable committing dollars to players, and agents and trainers and players and their families are going to be more comfortable accepting those deals if they know that the money is going to be there. If they don't, then they should be very cautious of what they're accepting, because if teams can't come up with those trades, then unless they're really committed to those deals and honoring them and saying, all right, well, we're going to go over and pay the penalty no matter what, then that's going to be creating some very volatile situations with some pretty powerful dudes. So I don't think that's in the best interest of anybody involved to sort of back out on any sort of agreement there. So I think what you're seeing the Cubs doing is pretty much what we expected. They signed Moreno, they signed Gleyber Torres, they signed Jefferson Mejia, and I think they're probably at some point, once they acquire the pool space, they're probably going to sign Eloy Jimenez, but they don't have the pool space right now to be able to do that. I'm sure they're not thrilled that they have to make trades before the trade deadline, when other teams realize that their back's kind of up against the wall to make these trades, both before July 2nd and even now, because teams know that what we wrote is 100% accurate. So they're kind of losing a little bit of leverage in the trade market when they're trying to trade maybe somebody like Matt Garza or somebody else on their major league team to try to rebuild. And that's why you're seeing them say things out there like, oh yeah, we're not, we don't definitely have to acquire more pool space, things like that. But they really, they need to acquire. I wouldn't be surprised if they did just end up going over it and paying the penalty anyway, if they can't acquire that pool space. But for them,
but that's a they're plan. That's a deep dis. A deep plan B, is that the correct way of putting it?
Yeah, they would have severely miscalculated, I think, if they end up not being able to acquire more pool space and having to go over just to pay Eloy Jimenez. Because that's great that you got that you might be able to get Eloy Jimenez and Gleyber Torres, talent wise. Obviously, we have them as the top two players on the board. But if they overcommitted to somebody like Erling Moreno or Jefferson Mejia or anybody else, not realizing, oh shoot, we're not going to have the pool space to sign all these guys, and we're going to pay the penalty, which is nobody over $250,000 for the following signing period, when you're probably again going to have at least $3 million, and probably one of the biggest, or at least I don't know what the bonus pools are going to be yet, but I should say one of the top, probably top five bonus pools again, given the caliber of their major league team, to not be able to sign a guy for more than $250,000 next year. You could have still signed Eloy Jimenez and Gleyber Torres and then kept your pool money for the next year. So sure, maybe they could trade some of that pool space, but that pretty significantly handcuffs you for for the next year if you're going to do that.
No, it most definitely does. And one of the things that you also brought up kind of leading into July 2 that's tough with this is it's also tough since this is the first year to get a handle on how much this cap space is worth, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, the Astros picked up Ronald Torres. I mean, I guess it depends what you think of Ronald Torres.
We're both Torres fans. I guess I'm kind of,
right. I think you and I like him quite a bit. It's not so much that he's young and in Double A, or I don't really care so much about that, but just the bat control that he has, and I think he's a good defender at second base. I don't think that he's not going to hit more than 5 to 10 maybe home runs a year, and he's probably about. I mean, would you say it's fair to call him 5'6", 5'7"?
Astros have cornered the market on the really short second baseman. They have obviously Jose Altuve. They've acquired Ronald Torres, and they also drafted Tony Kemp. So if there is a market inefficiency on 5'6" second baseman, the Astros have it nailed because they've got all of them. But,
they made
a trade that basically was we get a player for, in essence, almost giving up. What they gave up was cap space that they probably might not have even used. Is that not fair to say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have a $5 million pool, and if you need to spend $5 million to find good players in the international market, I mean.
Did anyone have that? I mean, besides the Rangers, did anyone have a $5 million budget last year?
In terms of what they've spent already, I don't see any team doing that. I think, the Cubs have spent a lot. Obviously, the Rangers have committed a lot of money, too. But, the Astros, people are, oh, why didn't they sign, more players? I mean, look, these guys are there's so many good players you can find in the international market for $50,000, $100,000, there's so many good guys who just don't have either they just haven't developed as early, or maybe they're using their real age, which is why they're not standing out as much. Against some of the kids who are probably really 19 years old and passing themselves off as 16 years old. Maybe they just don't have a high-profile agent or trainer who's bringing them along. Or for whatever reason, you can always find guys who are in that lower end of the bonus range who are just as good as some of these more famous guys. If you need to spend $5 million to find talent in the international market, you just need better scouts. Spending is not scouting. There's teams that spend a lot of money, and there's players that sign for huge bonuses that barely can make it out of rookie ball. So it's, spending is one thing, but, scouting and finding good players is far more important than any kind of lavish spending.
That being said, I don't think you are, but are you surprised at all that the Astros right now, as you noticed, mentioned, going into this, the Astros had the biggest budget because of their record last year of any team, and they have none. They have signed none of the top 30 at this point officially.
Well, I think things probably didn't go according to their plan. I think their plan was to sign Jose Herrera, the catcher out of Venezuela.
Number 10 prospect.
He ended up signing with the Diamondbacks for a little over $1 million. I think they thought they were going to be able to get him for a little bit less than that, but at a certain point, I think he just became committed to the Diamondbacks. And I mean, look, if they had signed him, there's guys who like him. Like I wrote, you could put any of those top 10 guys in just about any order. I think those guys pretty clearly separated themselves. You're always going to have disagreements on one or two guys there, but all 10 of those guys, that was pretty strong consensus that those were definitely the top 10 guys in the class this year. You could put Jose Herrera higher than 10, and I wouldn't make a huge argument about it. I mean, this is a guy who is fairly new to catching, but I think he's going to stick behind the plate, and I think he's got some offensive upside, too, to be able to get on base. And he's not a huge guy, but I think he's going to hit for some power, too, for a catcher. So, if they had gotten him, I think that would have changed things a lot. I think that was their priority. But, you know, look, they're still – I still think they're going to sign Wilson Amador, who's the number 24 prospects on our board. They signed Yoan Mauricio, who, you know, he's one of those guys who, once you get past, like, the top, you know, 20 or so guys, the spread in talent is just so thin. It's not like, oh, this guy is number 26 versus some guy who didn't make the list. You know, like Yoan Mauricio, and it's not like Mauricio's not a good player or not in the same league as, you know, Michael De Leon, who signed with the Rangers. I mean, they're pretty – I wouldn't say they're similar prospects, but in terms of value, I could see them being very similar. I think they probably signed for similar bonuses too. I think they're going to come away with some talent. I still think they're also probably going to sign Wander Franco, who's another – Dominican shortstop, maybe moves to another position, but he's probably also in that same range. So I think once they didn't get Herrera, you know, that really changed things up for them. But, you know, look, we always, like we've written about, I think in whenever I first wrote that first piece on who were going to be the buyers and sellers for trading international pool space. And one of the first teams I said was, I think the Astros were going to end up trading away space because you don't need $5 million to spend money to be able to find really good international prospects. I mean, I understand the Cubs' strategy too, but for the Astros to add somebody like Ronald Torres, who I really like, and I like a lot more than some of these guys who are on the top 30, I think they did. If they had come away with Herrera, it would have been a lot better. But I certainly understand the strategy that they were trying to take this year.
And it's interesting because what you're talking about is really two teams who are near the bottom in the big league level who are taking kind of different approaches as well, kind of all through their organization. The Cubs seem to be very much, their approach is we're going to find impact players. And the Astros' approach is very much, we're going to assemble a massive quantity of talent, and by spreading the risk, we're going to get more successful big leaguers. That it strikes me that, I mean, that's what they're doing kind of in some ways. The Cubs are out there and they're, you know, Soler and they're going out there and kind of, you know, swinging for the fences. The Astros, even when we're, you know, with the trade deadline coming up, the rumors again are that the Astros are looking for quantity. They want to get, they want to build a nice depth of prospects and deals. You look at this kind of even at the, even going down to 16-year-olds in Latin America, the Cubs are going for to sign the top two guys on our board. The Astros are going, you know, maybe we're going to see with this that they're going to get a large quantity of prospects. But they're also, the Cubs are saying, okay, Ronald Torres is probably not going to be an impact guy long term. We'll trade him for cap space. The Astros are saying, hey, Ronald Torres is probably going to be a solid, you know, going to be a big leaguer at some point. We want him. It's just interesting to me, kind of the approaches from the different sides. Looking at it also, you touched on the Rangers a little bit, but the Rangers every year are one of the most active teams in Latin America. That's definitely true again this year. With them, do you think they're a team that is going to go over the limit and pay some penalties for it?
It certainly, you know, looks that way. I mean, they signed Marcos Duplan out of the Dominican Republic, Yasin Irizarry, who out of the Dominican Republic, I guess he was born in Venezuela. They signed Michael De Leon, who was number 26, and they gave, you know, $1.8 million to Jose Almonte, who, you know, we saw that coming, but certainly didn't have the reports on him to justify putting him anywhere near the top 10, and just didn't have the reports with people being sold on his bat being able to play enough to put him in the 30 either. But they like to spend a lot of money in that market. They're certainly aggressive. You know, Duplan, Irizarry, you know, I understand those signings. De Leon, I get that one. I think Almonte is more of a stretch. That's going to be seen as a very big stretch within the industry. I'm not sure anybody was really sharing that opinion with them on Jose Almonte, but obviously we'll end up seeing who's right down the road. But the other guys certainly were more consensus guys. Edgar Arredondo out of Mexico, he's a pretty interesting guy. the right-handed pitcher without the breaking ball right now. It's sort of a concern, but he's still so young that he's got a fastball up to 91, pretty good changeup, pretty good feel for pitching too. So those are all interesting signings for them. I can see going over the pool space, having more justification than if the Cubs end up doing that, or at least I should say having to pay the penalty, because the Rangers are probably going to have one of the smallest bonus pools next year. So you could say, all right, let's take in, an every other year strategy almost to the international market and sort of load up on all the guys that we really like and we really have high on our boards, and just go every other year, because the Rangers are going to have one of the smallest bonus pools again next year. So, that I understand. Almonte doing it to get Jose Almonte, I don't understand. I don't think that bonus is commensurate with his talent as seen around the industry. But, if he works out, then it's I'm sure they're not going to be too worried about that.
And it's true that the penalty – it's the same penalty, but the penalty hurts you a lot less if you have a much smaller pool, because, as you said, it's not like you're out of the Latin market for next year. It's that you're going to have to basically sign a lot of lower money guys, because you can still spend up to your bonus allotment. It's just you can't spend more than $250 on any one player, correct?
Right. I mean, like, if you have a $2 million bonus pool, then the reality is you could do something like what I think the Yankees are probably going to do, which is sign — they already have signed Yonaris Rodriguez, Dominican shortstop, and I think that once Leonardo Molina turns 16 in August, they'll probably sign him for, I'm just guessing based on what the — I shouldn't say guessing, or making an assumption based on what the guys around him are getting at the top of the market. He's probably going to be in line for about $1.5 million. Between him and Rodriguez, that's probably going to take up their whole bonus pool this year. Now, obviously, you can sign six guys for $50,000 or less, and it won't count against your cap and all that. But that's one strategy you can take if you have a $2 million bonus pool. The other is, the Rays have to pay the penalty this year, too, of not being able to sign anybody for more than $250,000. They have a bonus pool of around $2 million, but you can sign, quite a few players. And they actually did this a couple of years ago, where they didn't spend any more than $250,000 on a player, and they still ended up spending about $2 million in the international market. So if you have – now, if you're the Cubs and next year your bonus pool is going to be $3.5 million, then that sort of restricts you and cuts off a window of opportunity that you've been afforded. So I don't understand – or I should say I don't agree with, a decision to go over and pay the penalty. I think that would be a miscalculation. But if you're at the, if you're looking at probably having a bonus pool that's at the bottom of the pack, then, I can understand going for that. A lot of the guys that you have on the top of your board and saying, all right, well, we'll swallow it for next year and just take the hit.
You kind of touched on it when you said this about we put together a top — you put together a top 30, the top 30 international prospects for this year. This is not — the further you get from the big leagues, the more fluid the rankings are. I mean, this is not something where you're saying, okay, that, hey, so-and-so's number — Leonardo Molina's number 5 and Yelson Godino's number 8. So there's a distinct difference between those two guys. We're projecting guys who we're talking are 5-6 years in many cases away from kind of getting into consideration for being promoted to the big leagues. So there's a lot of projection involved in this. And that kind of ties into for the teams as well. There's a lot of projection involved in this. And there are a lot of stories of the guy who signed for $50,000 or signed for $20,000, who you turn around 5 years later and that guy's a very significant prospect, because, as you said, it could be that one guy's 18. Well, yeah, he's 18, but he's really good. He's worth less to sign because he's 18 already. But at the same time, he ends up being a significantly better prospect than someone else. Or it's the guy who's a shortstop now with a really good arm and nothing else, but it ends up that he ends up being a really good pitcher. He actually can spin a breaking ball pretty well once he learns he can't hit. There's all kind of stories like that. along those lines, kind of segueing here, we had the prospect hot sheet that went up today, and Julio Urias, number one on the hot sheet this week, the Dodgers lefty. Ben, how shocking is this to you, what Urias has done in his first pro season here?
It's when we wrote him up last year, he always stood out. He had a really good fastball for his age, and especially for being a left-handed pitcher. Wasn't quite the same velocity of Jose Castillo out of Venezuela, who signed with the Rays, but it was a really good fastball, a feel for a good changeup, and really advanced pitchability. He was, it's the Mexican League signings are tricky. They're not scouted the same way as a player in the Dominican Republic or Venezuela. And in Urias's situation in particular, it was difficult because there was a medical situation with him where teams weren't sure what was going on with him, and they wanted to get him into their, they wanted him to see their doctors, and the Mexico City club was, sort of being standoffish about that. So there were a lot of health issues surrounding him that made his situation very difficult to read. But in terms of the raw talent that was there, anybody expected him to go out to the Midwest League immediately and just dominate hitters. I thought he'd be a guy who would go to the Arizona League, pitch pretty well there, maybe spend, the next year in a short season league, or maybe make the jump to full season ball at 17. But for him to be in the Midwest League and dominating like the way he is, I'm shocked. I didn't think he was going to be this good, this fast. I think we had very good reports. You can go back and read on his stuff and his feel for pitching at an early age. But for him to be this good, this fast, I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Agreed. Now, the other interesting part, though, is that as impressive as this is, I don't necessarily think that this makes a dramatic difference. It makes him – he's a better prospect than we thought he was coming into the year. But if this was a 16-year-old hitter who was doing this in the Midwest League, I'd be falling over myself about how impressive this is. As a pitcher – It's helpful. It's very good. I don't necessarily myself think it means the same thing, though, because being a pitcher who's well advanced doesn't translate into necessarily that you're going to keep dominating and stay ahead of hitters for the next 15 years just because you're way ahead of them right now. Do you agree or disagree with kind of, okay, it's a pitcher, so it's useful, but not as useful as it would be for a hitter?
I think so. I think we make Sometimes we make too much out of age for players, especially pitchers. I mean, look, you take the other end of the coin, you can take somebody like Rafael DePaula. Well, all right, well, he's 22 and he was in low A for a while. And, maybe he's obviously MLB ruled his age undetermined. So we don't really know how old he is, or there's a lot of players who have that designation. But look, the question is, how does the stuff project at the next level or at the big league level? And with Urias, I think at some point his stuff will take a tick up. It's already pretty good. But you're also talking about, look, a 5'11 lefty. There's not a ton of physical projection there. So the stuff, I don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to be throwing 97, 98 miles an hour. I also don't think he has to be a guy like that to be effective, but the fact that his pitching, his feel for pitching, his ability to throw strikes and set hitters up is beyond his age is certainly an encouraging sign. But I don't think that means that it's, like you said, it doesn't mean that this guy is a future number one starter just because he is 16 years old and in the Midwest League. He's certainly an exciting guy. But I don't like placing too much emphasis on age for prospects. I think that can get very distorted and can really tend to lead to some some bad decisions.
No, and the thing about it is stuff is stuff when it comes to pitchers, and really whatever age you are. I mean, that's the thing. With DePaula, yes, he may be a little old for the leagues he's pitching in, but the reality is that you look at his stuff, and his stuff is the best stuff in the league in a lot of cases, and that stands out. Urias' stuff is solid. It's very good stuff, but it's not where you say, wow, he's throwing, you know, he has a plus-plus fastball or he has a plus-plus changeup. It's that he really knows how to pitch as a 16-year-old with solid stuff. He doesn't pitch like a 16-year-old. I was watching one of his starts on MILB TV recently, and he's very comfortable throwing an 0-0 breaking ball to start off. And you do that in the Midwest League, you're going to be, if you can throw that pitch for strikes, you're going to be up 0-1 a whole lot because they're not looking breaking ball 0-0.
And that's part of just, I think you see a lot of pitchers coming out of Mexico who, you know, grow up pitching in organized, playing organized baseball more so than in the, you know, somewhere like the Dominican Republic or some other countries where you see a lot of kids come out of Mexico, like Roberto Osuna or Luis Heredia, who come out and, you know, the stuff and the size, or I should say the stuff of Osuna is exciting. You know, the size and the projection on the stuff of Heredia is exciting. But those guys also both have really advanced feel for pitching because they've done it at the, you know, in Mexico. They have a lot of experience growing up pitching in games, pitching in international tournaments. And I think you're seeing that with Urias, too, is just another – a lot of these Mexican kids grow up and come up in that baseball environment, and a lot of them do come in and immediately are able to have success because they have that experience and they have that feel for pitching immediately when they get into pro ball.
Yeah, it that's a very good point. Basically our point is that be excited about what he's doing, but don't go overboard on it yet, because a lot of this is that he has an extremely advanced feel for pitching. That's going to serve him well going forward. But if you have an advanced feel for pitching, no matter what your age is, and you're pitching in the Midwest League, that's going to help you have a lot of success because you're facing a lot of hitters who don't have a really advanced approach to hitting. When they see a breaking ball or a changeup early in the count, it either locks them up or they say, okay, I'm going to wait because I really want to hit a fastball. And you're not seeing that same recognition where they can do something with that pitch early in the count. And, hey, the reality is that if you can throw a good breaking ball early in the count, that'll play most of the way up the ladder, but not the same way that it does when you're in Midwest League. So, Ben, I know it's a little shorter this week. Apologize to the listeners. I've got to kind of get a couple things done before heading out for the weekend. I hope everyone had a good 4th. I hope you had a good 4th, Ben. Good 4th?
I think I just sort of relaxed.
Yeah, July 2 will do that to you. So thanks again to our friends at DraftDay.com.
DraftDay.com is a new concept that offers short-term or daily fantasy sports games for real money. The concept is simple. You pick the day you want to play and set a fantasy lineup. If your picks perform well that day, you win. You can play for free or real money, and they award cold hard cash nightly to the top performing players. They've already awarded more than $10 million, and it's completely legal to play. DraftDay.com also has a new rapid fire game that takes 1 minute to play with huge payouts. Just pick between a few choices of players and choose the ones that will score the most points. It's that easy. All you need is 3 of 5 correct to double your money. DraftDay is offering a special offer to Baseball America listeners, so be sure to head to DraftDay.com and enter the promo code BAPODCAST, and that'll start you off with a free instant cash bonus. If you like free money, head to DraftDay.com and use promo code BAPODCAST.
And we want to thank you all, listeners. Thank you for the downloads. Feel free to review us at on iTunes or elsewhere. And we'll be back again next week. Next week, we'll be talking midseason prospect update, because on Monday, it's the 5th right now, so on Monday, July 8th, we will roll out our midseason top 50 prospects list. A lot of other charts for subscribers to go with it, looking at some of the rising guys who didn't make the 50, but keep an eye on who last year's list included guys like Gregory Polanco. We'll have a chat on Monday with that. We'll kind of have a whole week of midseason prospect update news, and that'll lead into next weekend. Ben and I will both be in New York at Citi Field for the Futures game. So a very busy week next week at Baseball America, as it is usually. And thanks again. We will talk to you next week. Thanks, Ben.
All right, yeah, thanks.
Appreciate it. That was fun because that was, for me, that was just set you up and let you talk because, you know, way more than I did. So that was good. That was a really power-packed podcast. Appreciate it.
All right, cool.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. See you, JJ.